Welcome back to the Sought After Educator podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I have an announcement to make. The Sought After Educator Accelerator is closing enrollment on February 1st. So if you know that you're meant to have a brand that positions you as the go-to educator in your space, content that actually sells your education, and a backend that supports real momentum instead of feeling tangled and duct taped together, this is the window. This is for the educators who know their work is legit, their results are real, and their education should be selling out, that want to build a sought-after brand. We will be opening again later on in 2026, but the price point will not be the same. So if you are wanting to get into the Sought-After Educator Accelerator at the current investment, head to jodybrown.ca/SAE, and I will link that in the show notes. If you are curious if this is the right fit for you at your current phase, DM me over on Instagram at @itsjodybrown and we'll talk about it. All right, let's get into the episode.
How hey, to know welcome if you back need to the Visionary when Rising it comes podcast. To your finances
today,
or scaling
we are talking about money. We are talking about building wealth, simplifying your finances, leveraging mentorship, and avoiding some of the common entrepreneurial pitfalls that we can fall into when it comes to money at various phases in business. My guest today is Shay Bakani. She is the owner of Centure Financial, which is an elite finance firm. She operates as a fractional CFO for high-achieving entrepreneurial women. I can't wait to share this conversation with you because Shay really dives deep into some of the mindset shifts that we need to make in order to avoid some of the most common mistakes that entrepreneurial and specifically creative entrepreneurial women tend to make when it comes to scaling their business. Shay's also touching on how to think big and strategically make adaptations based on the changing markets and the economic landscape. So this is going to be a really incredible masterclass in building wealth and money management for the creative entrepreneur. Do not miss this episode. Let's get into it. Welcome to The Visionary Rising, the podcast for freedom-seeking, heart-led creative entrepreneurs, course creators, and online business owners. I'm Jody Brown, marketing-obsessed hairstylist turned content creation agency owner and visibility mentor, and I'm here to help you build your magnetic brand, grow your audience, and become the authority in your space. You'll get the most up-to-date conversations and strategies on visibility, marketing, social media, mindset, and entrepreneurship so that you can grow your business in a way that feels as good as it looks. Here, we keep it real and go beyond the basics. I'm obsessed with helping creatives get seen and heard and paid well for their work. Beyond a podcast, this is a movement. Welcome to The Visionary Rising.
Hi, Shay. I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining me.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Wow. And I love your content. It's like the vibe, the aesthetic, the content, the information, like it is so on point. So I'm so pumped for this conversation. I'm someone who has always been very creative. I started my business out of like passion and excitement and desire to help and make an impact and all that stuff. And the financial thing was very much like okay, I better learn this because I am going to be a business owner now. So I think that for a lot of creative entrepreneurs, that's where a lot of us come from. And I really am just excited to dive into this and just get your expert perspective on managing your money well and how to avoid some pitfalls, how to build wealth, all of the things, how to scale. Before we get started, can you just maybe give us a little bit of an overview of how you got to what you're doing today and just a little bit about your background?
Of course. So my name is Shay Bakani. As you've mentioned, I am the owner of Centure Financial. I'm also a fractional CFO and a financial strategist for women in business. And how I got started, I always say, like, this thing happened for me on accident. So my dad has worked in stocks my entire life. He worked at the Chicago Stock Exchange. And so he used to always tell me about business and finance. And while I'm long, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I just thought it was just something very normal and simple. But the way he explained it to me was always very simple, cut and dry. It was something that I could understand at like the age of 12 years old. And so I'm really grateful for him for that. So when people always say to me like, oh my God, you make it so simple. Or like you said, I love the way that you explain it on your feed. It's like, that's always how it was also taught to me. So that's really the only way that I know how to communicate it with other people. So when I first started, I was 18 years old. I started working in corporate accounting at a huge Fortune 500 company. I ended up meeting a mentor there. She was the chief accounting officer of the company. And before that, the only people that I ever met in finance were men. Like they were men, typical suits, like very cut and dry. So I never really cared for it. I was just like, oh, whatever. Like I'm here to get my paycheck and I go home. The moment that I saw this woman, she was dressed to the nines, a bubbly personality. And I was just like, oh my God, that's going to be me. And this is why I always think that representation is so important, is because sometimes you just need to see that this is possible or that it exists. I remember stalking her in the bathroom. I'm just like, oh my God, I would love to have a coffee chat with you. And she was very open to it. And she just really took a liking to me and really helped me mentor me, explaining to me like all the different facets of finance, accounting. She was actually a CFO of a company. She was a CEO of a company that actually sold and went public. So she was just very, very smart and strategic. And she really gave me the pathway for everything. So it was 2019. I had a couple friends who were in business. I remember they would always be like, oh, I don't know anything about finance. I don't know anything about numbers. And this was just second nature to me because I was working in business finance. I remember one night I reached out to a friend that had a business. She had a beauty agency. And I said, hey, here's what I do in my corporate job. I would love to be able to do it for you. And that was literally how Central Financial was born, through a cold email. We started growing solely based on word of mouth. And we just literally scaled from there, and we still grow a lot just based on word of mouth. But it was probably during COVID, the 2020, when I was like, I'm going to get in the content game, because I've noticed so many small businesses were closing down, or they were just going through a lot financially. And a lot of people just honestly had no idea what to do. And so I was like, I'm going to start posting online, just posting like educational content. And it really just started to take off. We have like 4K followers now on Instagram and 11K on TikTok. And so now we're just constantly growing. And I love that because it just shows that women are ready for this kind of financial education. Like far too long, when you look at financial content, it's really not meant for us. And so I really want to create a space that's meant for us, where we can talk about finance, not just some gross scale, but also the back piece of, like, okay, here's how to emotionally heal from financial trauma and shame. And here's what to expect when you are talking to a CFO or someone in finance or your accountant, because we've never, ever had these conversations openly.
Oh. Yes, that is so true. As you were talking, I was like, oh my goodness, that's absolutely right. Like even when I think back to when I found your account and I started following you, it is so refreshing to have someone that you can relate to, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like on different levels, and that is speaking in a way that you can actually understand. Because I think for so long, and I almost wonder if sometimes it's by design that it was it was just speaking a completely different language, for lack of a better, you know, explanation.
Absolutely. And
there's nothing that you can even relate to if you're not in that world. So I think you're so right. And I love the fact that it was another woman that inspired you to pursue that path. Because I feel like you're right. Like it's often we don't necessarily see what's possible until we see it's possible. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, okay.
Absolutely. And you actually made a good point. So my dad used to tell me this all the time when it comes to stocks. He's like, just use a bunch of words that no one really knows what it means. But when you compare it to a word where we do know what it means, I'm like, oh, that's what that is. Like when you think about stocks and the language of it, it shouldn't be anything foreign. You're investing into company. That's really all you're doing. You're investing into a company. So they give you pieces of that company. It was never explained like that. Like most people have to watch courses and they don't really understand the market and all these different things. And I'm like, if people were just to say exactly what it is, it's very simple. And my dad used to tell me all the time, he's like, there's going to be a bunch of different vocab words where no one knows what it means, but in reality, we all know what it means. So it's intentional because the majority of people don't really understand it. And I don't think it's meant for that. So I want to also break that barrier of, okay, it's not as hard or complicated as it seems. And I think a lot of women would actually like it because we are much more creative. We are much more intuitive in how we think. So I think when it comes to different parts of finance and investing, once we know what it is, we're amazing at it.
Love that. And that, I think that's just so inspiring to so many women who have worked in predominantly male-dominated fields. Yes. And there has been like all these impressions of like what a CFO should be, or like forward facing imagery, I guess, that we've always gotten.
Yeah.
So I love that you're, that is one of my favorite things in the world, is when I see women like breaking down barriers and just like doing things in their own way. And I think you just do that so beautifully. So
thank you.
I want to go back to something you said, because I would love to break that down a little bit. A lot of my listeners are creative entrepreneurs, and I kind of confessed earlier, I definitely had to learn a lot. I have an amazing bookkeeper who explained a lot to me. And like, that was something that I definitely needed to get help and education on when I got into business. And so I'd love to break down, what is a fractional CFO, and how do you know if you need one?
Okay, this is all so good. So I want to break down the different roles. I'll start with just the three main roles: a bookkeeper, a CPA, and a CFO. Okay, so there's other ones, but I think for the sake of like simplicity, let's just talk about this. So a bookkeeper does exactly what you think they do. So they do the record keeping. That is pretty, that is it. They do the record keeping for your financials. Now, how far it goes is really up to you, but at a more basic level, it's every single transaction. So every dollar that goes in and out of your account, your bookkeeper is responsible for tracking that and making sure that everything is 100% accurate. They're making sure that it's categorized correctly for, you know, tax purposes. They're making sure that every number that you have is good. Nothing, no one's stealing from you. Everything looks good and everything looks great. What they don't do is strategy. So they won't tell you, hey, based on these numbers, you need to raise your prices. Based on these numbers, you need to pay this person this much. They don't do any strategy. Their primary role is record keeping. Now, a CPA is someone that files your taxes for you. And again, a lot of CPAs, they don't do strategy unless you guys have already had that conversation beforehand. So they'll take the financial reports delivered by our bookkeeper, use that information to then go ahead and file your taxes. That is pretty much it. The CFO is going to look at those reports. They're going to look at how much you pay in taxes. They're also going to look at how much you pay your team, your pricing, pretty much looking at all that financial data and saying, okay, based on this, here's the strategy that we need to have. Here's how much we need to pay this employee. Here's how much your profit should be. Here's what the industry standard is like. So a CFO is much more strategy oriented, and they're using that financial data to make decisions.
Ooh, I love that. And when in business, is there a time or like an income threshold or like any of those things? Because I think I have a bookkeeper, I have a CPA, amazing. But I wonder if it's like, when do you know that you're ready, right, for a CFO? Because I feel like the other two, like some people do their own bookkeeping. That was the best decision I ever made in my life, was to stop doing my own bookkeeping.
Yeah.
Obviously, mostly we need accountants, right? Like filing your taxes is not optional. But like, when do you know you're ready to bring on or look for a CFO or someone to help you with the strategy?
Yeah. So I actually have a freebie on this that I'm going to actually share with you and your listeners, of just a financial roadmap of when to hire each professional. It actually goes more in depth because it gets into like wealth managers and tax strategists. But I say like a good rule of thumb, if you're making $5,000 or more, you need a bookkeeper. Like bookkeepers are so inexpensive now, especially with the rise of AI. Like they use AI tools, hopefully, if they're very modern and up to date. So a lot of them charge roughly $200 to $500 per month, which is, they're absolutely worth the price, especially if they're a good one, because you do not need to be spending time doing your own bookkeeping. One of the primary reasons is because there is a lot of compliance issues. Like you can't just go and update your books and say, I spent it on this. Like, there is a compliance factor. You have to meet a certain amount of compliance rules. So if you don't know that, it's not your job to then go ahead and try to study what those rules are. It's best just to hire a bookkeeper, and with their affordability, it's absolutely worth it. So I would say $5,000 a month plus, it's time for a bookkeeper. Like you said, you always need a tax professional no matter how much you make. It just is what it is. You are going to always need someone to file your taxes. For the most part, if your business, let's say you are less than $100,000 per year, it won't be that much to file your taxes. It's relatively inexpensive, but you absolutely need that regardless, unfortunately. Regardless if you made $0, if you lost money, or if you made money, you're going to always need to file your taxes. Now, with a CFO, I always tell clients, if you're making 15K plus, you need to start looking out for a CFO. Now, that doesn't mean that you need someone that's like full-time in your business, even part-time. Let's say you just want to like, hey, I just want to reach out for tax, for financial strategy every 90 days, every 60 days. I want you to come and look at my books. I want you to come look at everything and tell me what to do going forward. That is something where you can reach out from on a consulting basis with the CFO on. my clients that I typically work with, like we are very hands-on, they make about $800,000 plus. Once you're in that, you need someone very much in the weeds and the thick of your business, going through your financial data, going through your payroll, going through all the money that goes in and out of your account to create a strategy for you to say, okay, here's how we can best invest in our next asset. Here's how we can go forward and hire this employee. Here's the budget that we have in place for the next 90 days. So I am really their second brain when it comes to finances for their company, which you absolutely need, because the more money you make, it doesn't get simpler, right? It gets a little bit more complex and you just don't have the bandwidth or the time to manage it yourself.
Oh yeah, that's such a good point. And I think you're right. It's true that as your income climbs, like there's definitely more to think about.
And so much.
Even having a bookkeeper, like that was the first step, obviously, that I took. And having just a snapshot in my email every month of the top line revenue, the profit, she categorizes the expenses roughly. And it's even just having that little snapshot at the end of every month is so powerful, because then I can be like, ooh, like better look at this, or ooh, better like tweak this or figure this out. So I feel like it enables you to be a little bit more hands-on and a little bit more responsive in your business versus waiting till the end of the year and then being like, oh, like it's too late.
Absolutely.
Like you're done.
Even with just a bookkeeper, you can get by so far because you at least have clarity on what's what, right? That's why I said, like, if you're making 5,000 plus, you need a bookkeeper, because they're just going to offer you so much more clarity. Like you will know, okay, based on my sales, maybe I should continue with this service, or maybe I shouldn't. At a certain level, you as the business owner, you will be able to strategically make those decisions on your own. So I think that's why it's so helpful, because with this bookkeeper, you're like, okay, maybe I'm spending too much on this expense. Maybe I don't have this much money that I should be investing in a coach right now. Like just having that clarity alone will get you so much further in business and be able to help you grow and develop. But I just can't, there's so many people who think they can just DIY it themselves, or like you said, wait to the end of the year. And that's just so irresponsible for the business itself. Like, it's not even just financially responsible. You're irresponsible for the entire business, because if the financial health of the business is not up to par, you won't have one. So it's like you have to really have to put that in as a top priority.
Absolutely. And I think I've talked about this before, where it's those low level stress things that are just like in the back of your mind, that it's, you don't think about it all the time, but every so often you're like, oh God, I really have to do this. I feel like if you don't have things organized in business, like with your finances, with pretty much everything, it's like this low level stress that then comes to a head when you're like, oh no, better get everything together. It's tax time. Like it sounds silly, but from a wellness perspective,
yeah,
I think having a bookkeeper was one of the best things I ever did for that. And like,
no, wellness for sure.
Yeah. And then even as you grow, I love the idea of even just like consulting with a CFO, fractional CFO, to get that strategy. Cause I think you're right. Like it's a lot of the time, and I guess it's in whatever phase of business you're in, but like once you're in the phase where you're no longer trying to get things off the ground, where you're like, you do have to be more strategic with your energy and with your time. And I love that concept of like having someone come in and like, I talk about this with marketing all the time. Like sometimes you can't see the forest or the trees, right? So you're so close to your own stuff. I feel like the same is true with like finances. Like you're looking at things as a whole sometimes, whereas if you broke it down and were a little bit more strategic, like I can definitely see, even looking back times in my business where I'm like, ooh, if I would have had a second opinion, I would have done that differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest benefits is that, so for instance, we talked about with a bookkeeper, you can be strategic. You can make strategic decisions if you just know your numbers. But there gets to a point where someone, let's say you're not even used to making 200, 300, 500,000. What are you going to do when now you have to make financial decisions? You're going to be like, I'm not too sure. You're making these decisions with ignorance versus leaning on someone who's one, did what you want to do. They probably scaled other businesses before. So you have an expert who was like, I've scaled businesses from 200,000 to $500,000, from $500,000 to 2 million. Like I've done this countless times with the same businesses within your industry. So it only makes more sense to at least get a second opinion, get some consulting of say, hey, what would you say I need to do here? What would you say is the problem? Versus trying to go in and alone, because it's honestly not worth it. And the more you grow and scale, there's so much more to lose. So I think at some point you have to really be strategic with your finances. And honestly, if you don't have a parent that has the same success that you have had, it's very hard to lean on that guidance. So you have to sometimes go to outsource that guidance and that expertise.
Yes. Don't be asking for directions from people who've never gone where you want to go.
Thank you. That is just pure insanity right there.
So true. So I want to ask you, obviously, you've worked with a lot of really successful business owners, entrepreneurs. Like, are there any common mistakes that you see maybe when people do start getting to that level where they're crossing that 100,000 mark, whether it's like their side hustle or their thing that they're doing full time? Are there any things that you see where you're like, ooh, like this is a really common error that people should definitely look out for?
Yeah. So the biggest mistake that I see, and it's primarily with women in business, is that we overinvest in our team way too soon. And this sounds so crazy because some people say, like, you need a team, you need to outsource. And I'm the first one to tell you to delegate all day long. But women, we're natural givers. Like, we just give, and that's amazing. And I love that for us. However, we don't put the financial health of the company first. And you have to. And sometimes it makes people feel icky. Oh, I want to think about my employee first. That is not how business is operated. That's not how it's done. You have to put your profit and the financial health of your company first. And so, and you can still do this with a level of integrity. So let's say you are wanting to hire someone in the operation space, in the admin space, because this is where I always see that, in that kind of arena, where they want to pay them something that I'm like, your business cannot financially sustain it at this time. I would say you have to create a budget first. You can't go and say, I need to hire this person, let me get some rates. No, I need to hire someone. You need to know how much you can afford to pay this person, what it is that you need them to do. And then you go out and find someone that aligns with your budget and with the roles and responsibilities. And of course, you have to be realistic. So of course, you'll have to do some market research to see what that entails. But far too often, women just go out and we just hire and we just pay people these things. And one, we're not tracking the return on our investment. So we're not seeing, you know, what kind of value this person brings to our company, which we absolutely need as a small business. You can't just hire people for the sake of it, because we're not a corporation. So you have to hire people strategically, like, okay, what value can you add back to my P&L? And we just don't have a budget in place when it comes to hiring. And so there's been so many times where someone has reached out and said, you know what, I'm growing, I'm scaling, but my profit is terrible. I'm not keeping any money. And I look, and it's not unnormal for payroll and salaries and wages to be the highest thing on the P&L. That's not the problem. The problem is when you're overpaying for certain roles that aren't bringing value back into the business. And so as we lead and we are leading our team, we have to start with people that add value first into our business. So consider branding, marketing, sales. Once that is good and is afloat, then you can kind of start thinking more strategically and say, okay, I want to pay, you know, a fractional COO. I want to pay, you know, an executive assistant, which I'm not saying don't get an executive assistant until you're at a certain point. It's just you have to be mindful of how much you're paying these people, especially in the early days. Sales is always first and foremost the most important. And then, of course, marketing.
Yeah. That's such a good point, because I do think, too, like the rates in the online space, like, wild.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
it's like so, like, they're such a huge amount of range. So that's a really good point. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else that you see people doing that, like, when they're starting to make money and they're like, is that you're like, oh, stop this?
Oh my gosh. I would say investing. It goes back to the point, but I think investing in coaches and courses and things at a rapid rate. I'm a pro believer in education and investing in mentors and consultants and people that can really help drive and move the business forward. But there's a time to invest and there's a time to save. And a lot of people don't have a stopping point. They go from coach to course. And I think you have to do it, and you have to be able to, again, track your ROI, but you also have to have a point where you're like, you know what, let me implement what this coach just taught me. And in this time, I'm going to start saving. And it's like, no one, like, you don't spend time to actually implement. And I think this comes from an underlying emotion. And I think it's like, you feel inadequate. So you always feel like you have to be investing in things. You always have to, I have one client that did this. I'm like, you need to just stop and implement. You have the tools, you have the resources, stop and implement, or stop and hire someone now that can take some stuff off of your plate so you can make more money, and then you can hire that coach. And so I think we have to learn when is the right time to invest and when is the right time to save, but it's very difficult to do both at the same exact rate.
I actually have this conversation all the time, believe it or not, with, like, my coaching clients.
I believe you.
I think there's, like, two phases. I was just talking to someone actually about, like, confidence, right? That people expect to be confident before they've actually done the thing. And so I'm like, I feel like there's two steps to this. Like you said, it's like that feeling of inadequacy that we're chasing rather than addressing where it's coming from. First thing for confidence is, if you don't have the skill, you're not going to be confident in it. So learn the skill. Like, to me, I'm like, yes, if you need to invest to learn a skill or learn to do something, like, that makes sense. But the second piece is doing the thing. And yeah, that is important. You cannot skip. And I think sometimes, like you said, it's like, I finished this course, I didn't implement anything from it, but I did it. So now let me go look for the next thing. Whereas, what if we implement and actually, like, take action on the thing that you just invested to learn and see where that gets you. I'm so glad you said that. I think that's so true from so many different perspectives.
Yeah. See, I'm just like, whenever I say this too, it's usually like another service provider or coach is like, no, yeah, I see this. So it's not like I'm saying don't invest in education. Absolutely. Like you said, you have to have some level of confidence in what you do. And I think investing in your skill set at any point in time in your business is crucial, but there's a time and a place for that. Like you have to be monitoring cash flow. You have to be monitoring your profit. Can your business sustain itself if you go invest in this person? Some people just do it based on like emotion. They're not even looking at their accounts. They're not looking at expected revenue down the next 90 days. They're just investing and getting themselves into these programs where there's monthly payments without actually considering the financial situation and how this will affect them in the future. And so that's very important because what this can also do is put you in a state of lack where you are or scarcity, where you're now depending on this person or this coach or this course to now just make you something within ASAP, within 90 days and in 3 months, because you're just so anxious. And so I think just coming from a place of like financial security where you say, you know what, I feel good about this. I want to go ahead and purchase it. You just come from a much better place. You have much more headspace to actually go and implement those things.
Yes. It's like that regulated energy, right? When I first got into business, I've definitely done that. I've definitely been like, ooh, I need this. So like, let me invest in this person that I put so much weight on myself to like get this one thing. A lot of people coming into the online space have done that at some point or another. And there's times where I look back and I'm like, especially at the beginning, I just needed to implement. I didn't need to learn more. And now, like, one of the things that I love the most about my current coach that I'm working with is there was no real like scarcity moves. And I was just like, you know what? This is for me. This is what I want to be focusing on. This is what I want to be learning. This is who I want to work with. And that investment felt very different from the investments I made at the beginning of my career. So I think that's, are you coming at it with this like frantic, anxious, save me energy? Or do you have a plan?
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's like that victim mentality. Are you coming in to say, save me? Or are you coming in to say, you know what? Here's my problem. Here's my obstacle that I think it is. I don't know what to do next. I just need your guidance. I need your direction. Or are you coming like, I have a problem. I need you to fix it. And it's so funny because I always joke too. I think that's why I've gotten so much more selective with who my clients are. Because if someone has that save me energy, I'm like, no, thank you. I think you need to do some mindset work. But if you come over here thinking that I'm going to make all your financial problems disappear, you're sadly mistaken. Because one, that's not my job. Two, I like working on a collaborative partnership level. I don't want to come in and be like, let me help you. It's like, no, you're a leader, you're a CEO, and you're like, Shay, I don't know this, or I need to do this. Let's do it. We're working together. It's really a team partnership effort. It's not me coming in to fix all these problems and save you, because guess what? The problems are just going to come back up again if you don't do the work. So there are some things that where problems happen because you're just like ignorant and you didn't know, which is fine. This is like literally life. But then there's problems that happen because you keep putting yourself in this victim mindset and this victim mentality, and both are completely different. And no one's going to be able to help save you from a victim mentality. Only you can do that for yourself.
Oh, that's so true. I see that even just like in my marketing agency too. I always joke like people are either with us for the minimum of the contract or for years and years. And for most people, it's years and years. And all of those long-term incredible clients that we have come to it with a very collaborative energy. So can we talk about that actually? Because I think when it comes to money, like some people are really triggered by the word wealth, for example, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot behind that. So can we talk a little bit about the mindset work involved in making smart financial decisions and like maybe some of the things that you think would be helpful to my listeners in terms of where to start working through some of the things that may be holding them back from making investments in their business or having that confidence to make decisions from a regulated space instead of that save me space?
Absolutely. So this is actually one of my favorite topics because I actually look for this as I'm like vetting clients and I'm talking to them. I try to get to the mindset before we move forward because sometimes I'm like, you don't need me. You need this. And it really is all comes down to mindset. So I want all of your listeners to do this one exercise and it's completely life changing. It's literally saved me from all of my money issues and I'm not even being dramatic. You're going to get out a pen and a paper And I want you to write down every memory that you have with money. I don't care if it's from like when you were 10 years old and your brother stole your $5 till when a client didn't pay you. Every memory that you have, both good and bad, write it all down. If you can think about it and it has something to do with money or finances, write it down. And what you're going to notice, and the page is going to be pretty long for anyone that's never done this, what you're going to notice is a pattern. All of our money stories and our money memories have some sort of pattern. It probably started with the first one and it started to trickle down. And that pattern will tell you everything that you need to know, what you need to heal from. So it can be people where you constantly have memories of maybe money getting taken from you or you being taken advantage of. Let's say every time you go to the dealership, every time you go try to buy a car, the guy is like trying to take advantage of you and it ends up working. Or every time you try to get something fixed, you get quoted way more because you're a woman. Whatever the case may be, you have this feeling of when it comes to money and finances that's still lingering with you. And if it's not a feeling you want, you need to rewrite your story and change it. And the cool thing about that is we have the ability to, we just first have to be able to see like what's actually going on. So when you do that and you start jotting down all these memories, like I said, you're going to notice a pattern of some sort of like, okay, wow, maybe I am a person where I hoard money. I hoard it. I have a client like that where she would just save money. She didn't want to invest, even though she told me that she wanted to scale the new heights. And I'm like, okay, in order to do that, you have to invest. She just wanted to hoard her and save on all to it because of some past money issues. Have clients, the moment they get it, it's out the door. They can't hold on to money. And a lot of that comes from a place like, let's say you were younger and you didn't have money. And so you constantly go back to those memories of where you didn't have money, or you constantly have this feeling of like, oh my gosh, I wish I had it, or and I don't feel safe with so much of it. I don't feel safe with a cushion. Even though you don't think you're telling yourself that, if that's what's constantly showing up, that is what you're telling yourself, and you need to constantly rewrite that story. So let's get to, okay, let's say you have all the memories on the paper, you know the pattern, what's actually wrong, you know the story that you've been telling yourself. Now rewrite that story. Say, okay, I love having a minimum of $10,000 in my account. I love having a minimum of X amount in my savings. I love having investments and other avenues. Whatever that story is for you, write it down and look at it every single day. And I'm not being dramatic when I say every single day, because it really does get planted into your mind. And now what you're doing is you're setting a new financial standard for yourself. So whether you feel safe with $3,000 in your account to $13,000, everyone has a new standard. Set that new standard for yourself of what feels safe. And the moment you say it out loud and you constantly read it, it just happens. It gets set in stone for you. And so a lot of my clients are extremely wealthy. Their standard is I have to have a minimum of $20,000 in my account. I have to have this much in my investment account in order to feel safe. And I'll always tell them to tell me that. So when it gets below that point, I know like, okay, they are not coming from, they're not thinking clearly because they don't feel safe. And so you always want to make sure that you understand what your standard is and also communicate that to the person that is managing your finances if you have someone. So they know, okay, if it's not in this place, just know that maybe I could be making decisions that are a little irrational. Maybe they come from a place of scarcity. Maybe they come from a place of fear because I'm not feeling safe right now with this amount. But what that also does is it really helps change your mindset and you really open an opportunity for yourself to make more money. The last thing that I would also say is it's from one of my favorite books. It's called 10X is Easier Than 2X. And I actually read it recently. It's become one of my new favorites. And I actually really love it because it basically talks about the principle of how wanting to scale to 10X is actually significantly easier to scale to 2X. And I see that across my wealthiest clients where I'm like, they started this business like a year ago and they're already doing $300,000 in sales. And now they have this goal to sell for 10 million. They are just thinking massively. And I've been doing this for a while, since 2019. And I feel like I've also start to pick up those traits because I'm like, you know what? If they did that, I want to do that too. And so it's very cool, but it's something that also I like to tell other people who are like wanting to get to that level is that scaling your business to 10X is way easier than trying to go inch by inch and like 10,000 a month and then go to 15,000 and 20. It's actually much easier to scale to 10X. So here's the principle, and I want everyone to do this exercise. Whatever your financial goal is for the end of 2024, let's say you want to make 100,000, half a million, whatever that is, I want you to multiply it by 10. Now, if I were to ask you right now, let's say your goal for the end of the year is 100,000. I would say, okay, how are you going to make $100,000 at the end of the year? And I want you to tell me that, like, whatever your goal is, how are you going to make 100,000? And then you're going to go in your head, like, okay, I would do this. I would sell this course. I would have this. Now, if I told you to scale to a million, how would you scale your business to a million within the next 12 months? Now the story changes. You're going to do a completely different set of things. We're like, now I'm probably going to sell high ticket or I'm going to do this. What you would do would change completely. But most of us don't do those things. We try to take those baby steps, those little micro tasks that actually don't make a huge impact versus if you shift your frame of mind to say, okay, if I was actually scaling to 10X, I would do completely different things. And I'll give you an example of one person that I asked this recently. And I was like, okay, if you were, what's your goal? And they're like, 150,000. I'm like, okay, if you were to do 150,000, what would you do? And they were saying like, okay, they have a business. And like, okay, well, I would do that. And then of course, I'd probably take on additional clients in this other industry. Like they were talking about another side hustle. They were talking about, they wanted to do like three things. I'm like, okay, what if it was like 1.5 million? What would you do? And it was so crazy. They're like, well, I'd probably start a yacht business because they know a lot of people in the yachting industry. And they're like, I would get these yachts sub rented out for their, on their behalf. I would charge this much for a night. Like it was a completely different plan. And I was like, do you notice how your plan was completely different? And they're like, oh yeah. I'm like, yes. So you should probably just focus on that $1.5 million plan, because at least if you fall short, you actually hit your $150,000 goal. So that's why I said, like, if you do this exercise, you'll realize that these tasks are two completely different things, but just having that higher frame of mind, you now only focus on the things that get you to where you want to go versus those micro tasks that would have just taken up space and taken up time.
Yeah, that is so good. That is powerful.
It was such a powerful moment for me, because most of us do want to do 10X. Our mind just tells us like, no, we have to wait. We have to go up little by little. And that's so not true. The more I work with high performing business owners, I'm like, that is completely false. Like I've seen people raise millions of dollars from having nothing, from just a business plan and a deck, to actually going out and raising millions of dollars, to people, like I said, scaling their business from zero to 300,000 in 1 year. So it's, I don't believe in this idea that you have to scale up little by little. Of course, there's pros and cons to both. If you grow too fast, like, and you're not ready, obviously that's a huge issue. But I think that there's also a way to go about it, especially when you have the right mentorship, you have a team in place, you're able to do it at a pace that works for you. But also the mental exercise, the whole purpose of it is to help you identify those little small things that you're doing that actually aren't getting you to where you would really want to go. Because when you think bigger, not only do you start pulling more strategically, like the person I was telling you about where they're like, before they were talking about doing two side hustles and their business versus, oh, I would subcontract these yachts. I'm like, whoa, that is not what you said the first time. It's so funny because they're like, okay, now a million. Obviously, that requires me to do a different set of tasks. And it's like, yeah, that's the point. We are doing things that aren't getting us to these big goals. And we're wondering why we're not hitting them.
Oh, yes. That's so good. I love that. Can we talk a little bit about the difference? I'm going to switch gears a little bit, but the difference between growth and scaling.
Okay. So we're actually going to talk about three of them so I can really help people get it from a full picture. Growth, scaling, and expanding are three different things. Growth is exactly what you think it is. It's when you increase from one state to another. So this could be at any size. So growth is one of those. It's just like more of a broader term. But reality, it's just, let's say you go from 10,000 to 15,000 per month. You are growing. Even if you go to 10,000 to 100,000 per month, you are growing. So it's very broad. So when someone says, okay, I can help you grow your business, it's okay, what does that look like? Are you going to help me grow revenue? Are you going to help me grow my team, grow operations? So growth is any increase, okay, of any size. Scaling, on the other hand, is a little bit different. Obviously, you are growing in the process of scaling, but scaling is when you actually scale your operations as a whole. You're scaling your business. So this could be that you're scaling your team. Let's say you're scaling your tech stack. So all the technology that you use to be able to support your clients. You are scaling more so on an operational level. And of course, as you scale on an operational level, it does impact your finances. So I'll give an example. Let's say that you own a salon, right? You make $10,000 a month by yourself. You're the only one in the salon. You're the owner. $10,000 a month, and you want to scale to, let's say, $20,000. Now you're going to hire maybe another stylist to come in to work with you. Now you're starting to scale your operations. Now maybe you have online booking. You're starting to scale the systems and everything that you use. Okay. Now let's talk about expansion, because this is the one that I think doesn't really get talked about a lot, but sometimes I think this is what business owners may mean when they say that. Expanding is when you really go wide. So growth is when you go up or like going on a chart. Expansion is wide. So expansion can also mean that, let's say you're opening another salon location. Let's say that you have team members now that you want to outsource outside of California, Canada. Like you're really expanding where you are, and you're also expanding your customer base. So scaling and expanding are two completely different things. Scaling isn't as expensive. So to scale, you can do so and still be able to have a healthy profit. When you are expanding, you are going to use a lot of cash. So whether you are raising capital or you're using your own capital, it's going to be very expensive. So it is important that you know the difference, because when you expand, you spend a lot of money, because you are obviously, maybe you're getting a new location. Maybe you're getting a team elsewhere. You are spending a lot of money to make all of this happen. So expanding is much, much more expensive. But all three really obviously lead to growth. It's just, what area in the business are we talking about? So when you expand, it's the same thing. You're not just expanding your revenue. you are expanding your team. You're expanding how you do business. The services that you offer tend to also expand. The customers that you reach could also probably start to expand as well. So instead of focusing on just, I don't know, here in Orange County in San Diego and all the way to Orange County, there's like a lot of stylists that really focus on that wealthy mom. So let's say instead of going that, you now start to expand your customer base beyond that. So like maybe an older customer, whatever the case may be, you are also expanding your customer base along with your operations. When you're growing, no matter what, your expenses are going to grow as well. However, you don't want it to grow at the same exact rate that your income is growing. So let's say you want to grow your income by 2x, 3x, 10x. Well, that means your expenses, it's also going to grow as well no matter what, but it should not be at the same rate. And what this does is it gives you a healthy profit margin, right? So that's really what you want to focus on. So one of the key things to do that, which is like an easy one, is to raise your prices. Now, I always say this first and foremost, because I can almost guarantee that the majority of people do not have their prices high enough. Right. This is just like the reality of it. Like the majority of people aren't raising their prices in a way that is sustainable to scale their business. They still have their prices at a way where it was good for them when they were a solo entrepreneur. It was just them and an admin. And now as they have a team, they have to be able to scale at the same rate. So that's the first one. The second one is also having different streams of income within the business. So like you offer consulting, coaching, agency, like there has to be other streams of the business other than just one. You have to have other avenues of how you're making money because each avenue has its own profit margin as well.
Yeah. And I think it's something that's really important too, because I know for me, sometimes there'll be different like swings. And so sometimes one area will grow differently, or maybe you will lose a team member and all of a sudden you need to like recalibrate. And it's been a really, it's almost been, I don't want to say like a cushion, but like, it's definitely increases the feeling of security when it's not all riding on this one thing, for me at least.
No, absolutely. I think you just need that in general because every business has some form of seasonality. There's in some capacity, right? Like even if you have steady months, there's some form of seasonality in your business where there's some months where your payroll is astronomical and there's some months where it's just like very steady and slow. And there's some months where you get paid a crazy amount and there's some months that are just much, much slower. So really understanding that seasonality in your business is also going to help you. But now having different income streams that help support that seasonality. So for instance, whether you have some form of rental in your business, and I'm starting to see this more and more outside of across every creative business now, where they are starting to have like creative studios, they're starting to have different places where they can rent on PeerSpace. PeerSpace is like the Airbnb, but for like photography studios. And so it's just another way where a lot of people who are, let's say you're a photographer, instead of now you just going out to shoot content, you'd have your own studio that's super curated, beautiful, it has its own aesthetic, then now you rent out to clients or you rent out to other photographers. And so now there's not, we're not just capped to one, two incomes. Now we can be much more creative, especially in the market that we're in. Even like when you think about where our industry was going with like content, people are paying for content. Like people are paying for masterclasses, they're paying for videos, they're paying for memberships. So now there's other avenues that you can have within your business really serve your customer at every touch point. So let's say someone is ready to invest with you, but they don't want to go all in just yet. They don't want to pay thousands of dollars per month. Say, okay, well, I have this membership where we do group calls. I have this membership where I give different tips and advice that you can't find on socials. Now that's just another way to also bring in income while still supporting people who just maybe don't have the money to pay you at a higher point yet. So I think having different ways that people can work with you is super crucial, especially now in this economy where things are fluctuating up and down based on what's on the news and what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's a really good point too. Maybe we'll just touch on that. I said this was my last question, but really this is as someone who works with like a lot of obviously really successful entrepreneurs and business owners, I think there is a lot of, and I love that you said based on what's on the news. I feel like there's a lot of like reactivity. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of different conversations. What's your take on approaching business, like depending on the economy, for lack of a better word? Is it something you factor in? Is it something that you're like that you even think about, or do you just stay in your lane and focus on what you can control?
That's a good question. So I have three different news apps on my phone that I check all the time. And I'm going to tell you why, because I'm not one of those people that believe anything that's on there. But like I said, my dad was always in stocks. So when I first started investing, I was investing in stocks. If anyone knows anything about the stock market, prices are actually, a lot of it is dependent on what's on the news. So let's say, for instance, Tesla is a big one. So let's say one of the Tesla plants, there's always like bad media with Tesla. That's why I picked them. Let's say something is wrong with one of their batteries or something happened to one of their plants. Now that's going to heavily affect that stock price and it's going to go down significantly. So when you look at that from that perspective, what this means is that how people react to things affects the business market. So with a lot of my clients, I do focus on the news, mostly from a very high level standpoint of economics. What's happening with consumer credit card debt? What's happening with consumers? Are people saving or are they spending? Are people holding on to money? Are people looking to buy a home or are they looking just to save and stay where they are because interest rates are so high? This honestly just gives me a bird's eye view of what's happening with the economy. Now, most of my customers are other business owners. So a lot of that doesn't affect them, doesn't affect like how they spend money with me directly. However, it does affect their customer. So I have a lot of customers where they sell direct to consumer. And so I'll tell them like, okay, look, you know, like my sales are slow. I have no idea why. Let me go to marketing. Let me go to sales and just bash them to see that what's happening. And I'm like, actually, if you look at the market right now, consumers are holding on to cash. The news is scaring people. People don't want to spend. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. Their payments are also at an all-time high. So people are holding on to cash more than they ever have before. So before you start thinking maybe it's my marketing strategy, more it's maybe it's my sales strategy, it really could just be your consumer. Your consumer probably doesn't have as much money as they used to. So it is good to get it from that way. But like you said, you cannot control what's happening. And so you shouldn't try to control it. Instead, you look at it from a very strategic point of view. Yeah. So one of the things that I did for one of my clients who a lot of their business comes from the bridal industry, oftentimes it will fluctuate based on how the market is doing because their consumer relies heavily on debt or their consumer relies heavily on their parents, let's say, to help them pay for their wedding. Majority of weddings are $30,000 to $50,000 in California. So people aren't paying for all of that out of pocket. They use debt. They probably use friends and family. And so if we look at the market and we say, okay, consumers are running low on savings, they're at an all-time high for when it comes to debt. Now we understand maybe why they aren't spending money as fast. Now we understand why it's taking them so long to book after a call when last year it was like right away. So now we're really understanding the consumer. So what we did was we start implementing payment plans, monthly payment plans. So before it was like a 50% deposit, then you pay 50% before the wedding date. Now we say, okay, what if we did monthly installments, very similar to Klarna, because we're starting to see brands like Klarna, Affirm, all those pay for brands start to spark up. And that's also from paying attention to the economy. It makes sense because a lot of people don't have as much as they used to. So starting to do things like that really helps you understand, okay, here's how I'm going to pivot if necessary, because now your market, your industry. I think it is very important to at least watch the news as it pertains to your industry. So every single industry has their own news source. So if you are in the beauty industry, it's going to be like WWD and their Vogue Beauty. That would help you look at it from a very high level strategic business lens. If you are in stocks, obviously they have their own. You have Bloomberg, you have the Wall Street Journal. So every industry, no matter big or small, photography, wedding, has their own sector where they can get news from. And I highly recommend that you read it even once a week, even if you just listen to it on a podcast. You know how to go into your business more strategically, because if your consumer is doing something they've never done before, now you have a little bit of a better idea of why this is happening.
I always read like the HubSpot roundups and like, all of the marketing things that are happening. And I think it's interesting. I think the important thing too that I love that you said is that how we responded and like what you did. And I want to point out what your client didn't do, and that is start to spiral into thinking that their business was going to close and everything was going to be awful. And I think the thing about like news cycles and everything is like, they're quite short-lived a lot of the time. And
absolutely.
So people tend to like overreact, I think, in certain situations and overcompensate maybe when it's like, let's do this tweak and like ride this out a little bit. Like, how can we like adapt instead of like totally freak out and burn everything to the ground.
When you think about what COVID was and what the 2008 was, there were people that made millions during that time. And so often what I would do too is I would read books from that time period of people who build businesses and who are successful. And I'm like, okay, well, if this happens again, what would we do? How could we pivot? How could we make sure the business stays afloat? So it's also thinking very strategically and not thinking like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. It's okay, if this were to happen, it's May Day, what would I do? And just having that plan also makes you sleep better at night. Like if you're someone that's anxious about the market, okay, create a plan and say, okay, if this were to happen, here's exactly how I would pivot. Here's exactly how to move forward in this market to make sure that I'm successful, because you can truly be successful in any economy. You just have to adapt as the market adapts.
100%. And I think it's something I notice, at least like in the online space, is like the trust building is like very important. And like the way that people spend their money now, I'm noticing, is like very much based on like relationship values, all of that kind of. And there's a ton of statistics to back it up too. So I think it's like you said, just really like maybe if you're struggling to sell, like maybe it's something where it's okay, how can we build some trust? How can we maybe create like a taste or offer, something like that? There's so many different ways to approach it. I think what people go to is like, the economy's bad. I can't make any money. There's no way anyone can make any money. People are making lots of money still. Like it's still, I love that answer. So thank you so much. Shay, I had high expectations for how fantastic this conversation would be today, and you absolutely exceeded them. You are just brilliant. I'm so grateful to you for being here and just sharing your knowledge. Like, it's really amazing to see like women who are so smart and powerful and like making huge waves. So thank you for sharing that with me and my listeners today.
Thank you so much. You're so sweet. I really appreciate it. I had fun talking to you guys too.
This was so much fun. Where can my listeners go to find out more about you?
Of course. So you can go ahead and stalk me on Instagram, Centra Financial, or Shay and Finance on TikTok. I'm always available if you want to hire me as a fractional CFO, whether that's part-time, just on a consulting basis. I invite you guys to reach out to me on my website. The link is in, and I'll also share it with you guys in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Thank you again. And send me the freebie as well. We'll link that in the show notes.
I'm going to send that link. Yep.
Yeah. If you are someone that wants to dive in and think about where you're investing your money and just really approach your business strategically, which I think at some point we all got to get there, as much as we're creatives, as much as we're visionaries, like you have to think strategically when it comes to business if you want to be here for the long haul.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Thank you again, Shay. And we'll talk soon.
Bye.